Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus. We have bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. We looked high and low for a good one, but the bad and the crazy just outweighed everything else. And Jim, why would we have it any other way? It's kind of been that way for most of this campaign season. But our first bad martini has nothing to do with the campaign, although it could end up reverberating into the campaign. And that's that we learned on Wednesday that the Russians have been behaving very badly in the Baltic towards one of our Navy destroyers. Here's Peter Alexander of NBC News with the story.
Below the bridge wing. Below the bridge wing.
A pair of Russian fighter jets buzzing the USS Donald Cook. The unarmed attack planes once streaking within 30 feet of the Navy destroyer in the Baltic Sea. So low, one official tells NBC News, the plane caused a wake in the water. These photos revealing just how close they came. The flybys, more than 30 in all between Monday and Tuesday. U.S. officials say the Cook was in international waters 70 miles off the Russian coast.
Which means it's safely far enough off of shore. These were considered attack-like maneuvers. Obviously, they didn't drop munitions and the jets weren't carrying any. But you would expect a pretty fierce response from an American administration after this, Jim. But instead, here's what we got from Josh Earnest.
This incident, as you won't be surprised to hear, is entirely inconsistent with the professional norms of militaries operating in proximity to each other in international waters and international airspace. Any peacetime military activity must be consistent with international law and norms and conducted with due regard for the rights of other nations and the safety of other aircraft and other vessels. There have been repeated incidents over the last year where the Russian military, including Russian military aircraft, have come close enough to each other or have come close enough to other air and sea traffic to raise serious safety concerns, and we continue to be concerned about this behavior.
Jim, I'm sure Putin's learned his lesson after a fierce statement like that.
I was just about to say, Greg, damn, you got served, Putin. Take that, okay? Anybody got a fire extinguisher? I think you could feel the burn here. We're an audio podcast, so we're not doing it justice. You really should try to go find the video of this because it looks like something out of Top Gun or something like that. Like somewhere out there, there is a Russian maverick saying, I'm going to buzz the tower. And his own version of Russian goose saying, no, don't do it, don't do it. And, you know, he does it. Now, this is a bad sign for several reasons. One is, you know, you could say this is a demonstration of Russian strength and power. You fly that close to the American ships like that, you're basically saying, I can see you, I can get you. This plane is unarmed, but you don't really know if the next one will. If things ever come to conflict, I will be able to take you out. It's definitely meant to intimidate. It's definitely meant to kind of boast and to exert both psychological and, you could argue, kinetic power. The other thing is, boy, you know, Greg, I hope that when you talk about 30 feet away from American ship, what happens if the guy sneezes? What happens if something goes terribly wrong and he ends up being a little too close? And he ends up, imagine the day that a Russian jet crashes into an American ship. And everyone starts asking, was this deliberate? Was this not deliberate? Was this a kamikaze run? You know, this is how wars get started. I don't have to quote the Fred Thompson bit from Run for Red October, but what the press secretary Milquetoast is saying there about these international norms about keeping a safe distance from each other is that nobody wants to start a shooting war by accident. So on the one hand, this is tremendously reckless on the part of the Russian military. Not that stunning. But you look at how they have tested NORAD defenses flying up by Alaska and Canada. You look at how they've tested NATO defenses. I mean, they probe us pretty regularly. If you pay attention to these sorts of national security issues, you have to look at this and wonder, why are they doing all this probing? Why do they want to know where the weak spots in our defenses are? Because if they know them, won't they feel a little more tempted to try to exploit them? Again, a sternly worded rote recitation of international law isn't likely to deter the Russians. I don't know exactly what the right form of retaliation or proper indication is, whether it's to, you know, have us our send a U-2 plane over Moscow again or something like that. Obviously, they think they can do this with impunity, and hopefully this video will kind of shake the Obama administration out of its complacency. But what are the odds of that, Greg?
Well, it's also a test probably to see exactly how the Obama administration would respond to these things. And so if it is, in fact, a test, what grade are we getting?
I don't know the Russian alphabet that well, Greg, but whatever F is, it's probably that.
We do need a new president. There's no doubt about that. But as we choose one, let's think about some other issues and go to the bad martini now. Jim, you may remember it was all the way back on Sunday in the wake of the Colorado Republican State Convention that Paul Manafort, the new delegate head honcho for Donald Trump, said that it was the Cruz campaign engaging in Gestapo-like tactics. I'm sure you can remember that since it was just 4 days ago. Interestingly, the tactics seem to be getting a little jackbooted, but not in that direction. This is from the Indianapolis Star. After expressing reservations about Donald Trump, some of Indiana's delegates to the Republican National Convention say they've received threatening messages from a few of the GOP frontrunner supporters. The emails warn that the delegates are being watched and imply they could be targeted. Some send ominous wishes to delegates' families. Now, to be fair, Trump's Indiana campaign calls the threats deplorable. But let's look at some of these things. Craig Dunn is a delegate and Republican chairman of Indiana's 4th Congressional District. His message read, "You sorry expletive. I hope the worst for you and yours." This delegate goes on to say, "It's very disappointing. I probably received 25 to 30 hate emails, phone calls, and voicemails, posts on Facebook that I deleted. Now they're hunting down friends of mine and posting that kind of stuff on their Facebook pages." Another delegate who's very skeptical of Trump is a guy named Kyle Babcock. The message he got was, "Wrong side, Kyle. Hope the family's well. Your name and info was sent to me on a list that is going public. Think before you take a step down the wrong path. The American people want to have faith in you, but it looks like a future in hiding is more appealing," unquote. Jim, obviously this is probably a tiny fraction of Trump supporters, but given what we just talked about with Mary Catherine Hamm on Monday, it's repeating itself.
Pretty appalling. And some folks might say, okay, what we're seeing from Manafort and the rest of the Trump campaign is a form of psychological projection when they accuse somebody else of Gestapo tactics. He never went into any detail about what the Cruz campaign did to be Gestapo. Their perception of history is that Gestapo was just really highly organized. And that's now Gestapo is now a synonym for organization. I was particularly frustrated this morning, Greg, when I looked on the Drudge Report, and his second headline up there was "In Hiding After Voterless Election." And it sounds like from that you might think the Colorado Republican Party chair was like, he's so ashamed of it. Well, no. As Ian Tuttle of National Review reported, you know, his home address and home phone number were put up on Twitter, and it was shared 600 times. So it's out there, right? So everybody knows where this guy lives. So now he's got the local police department and sheriff's office doing watch on his home. He's got a police department doing the same thing in his office. Like, this is not how our politics is supposed to work. Like, you don't get to rage at people and threaten their families because you were too disorganized to bother to show up at your own district conventions. Good heavens. And the second thing, in hiding over voterless election, Greg, speaking as somebody who grew up with Matt Drudge, right after the Lewinsky report, it's so bizarre to see him reporting something just flat out isn't true. You can argue whether precinct caucuses are the best system. You can say, hey, you know what? This system is comparably complicated and convoluted, but it is not a voterless election. They had tens of thousands of people show up at like 3,000 sites across the state. And for some reason, all of a sudden, it's this claim, oh, it was stolen. It is disheartening to see Matt Drudge throwing gasoline onto the fire and seeming to want to facilitate these conspiracy theories. And this is all because Donald Trump and his team can't say, you know what? We totally screwed up. We were not prepared for this system. We didn't pay attention to it. We didn't even go and speak to the Colorado State Convention. Ted Cruz did. You think maybe that had a factor in it? Woody Allen once did the joke, 90% of life is showing up. Well, Trump didn't show up. If you don't, you know, one of the guy who's burning his Republican voter registration on also featured on Drudge, didn't show up to the Congressional District Convention where he was named as a delegate. He skipped that stage and he showed up at the state convention and thought he was able to participate there. He wasn't. He didn't know how the system worked. And, you know, if you want to be a delegate, you have to know how it works. And it's just a baffling and frustrating set of circumstances. And now you're ending up with people who are so, my suspicion is, mad at themselves and mad at Trump and his team for not doing their jobs and not doing what they're supposed to do, that they're lashing out at the state party chairman because he's just the most convenient object. And by blaming him, they don't have to think about what they themselves could have done and didn't do.
This might be the most ominous one of all in Indiana. This was directed to a guy named Tom John, not the former pitcher, chairman of Indiana's 7th Congressional District and an at-large delegate candidate. Here's the message, quote, "You know, traditional burial is polluting the planet, Tom. Hope the family is well. Your name and info has been given to me on a list that is about to go public. Good luck becoming a delegate. We are watching you." Quote.
let's assume that this delegate, he decides not to show to Cleveland, that this intimidation works. I think the strange thing is that it sounds like a lot of Trump's, well, it's justified. The end justifies the means. They're perfectly fine with that. And yet they surprise that so many people find Trump and his supporters and his movement utterly repugnant. So I'm glad the Trump campaign denounced it. But you notice you never really see the candidate get all that upset that people are doing this in his name, do you?
I haven't seen it yet.
No.
Meanwhile, Trump seems to have found a new friend. As we go to our crazy martini, this is Karl Rove now, had publicly blasted Donald Trump as a petty man consumed by resentment and bitterness with little gravitas and almost no chance of beating Hillary Clinton. But privately, the super PAC conceived by Rove is suggesting to its donors that it can help Trump win the White House and save Republican senators whose re-election bids could be jeopardized by having Trump at the top of the ticket. The apparent warming of the American Crossroads super PAC and its sister groups to Trump has become evident in its recent communication with donors, including a Tuesday afternoon investor conference call, according to multiple sources familiar with the outreach. The phone call, which featured Rove, Crossroads officials, and a pollster, laid out swing state polling and electoral map analysis done by the group showing circumstances in which Trump could beat Clinton. One source, a high-level operative with the Koch brothers' conservative advocacy network, characterized the conversation as heralding a softening of the anti-Trump position within the big money GOP establishment. Their essential logic is, quote, it's not that they support him, only that if he's the guy, we can do something to stop Hillary. So, Jim, strange bedfellows here.
Sometimes you see news and it genuinely surprises you. This really genuinely surprised me. And not just because for a long time, Karl Rove has been writing very critical things about Donald Trump and saying this guy is the worst possible choice for Republicans. He's going to get demolished by her. He's exactly what Hillary Clinton wants to run against. And the other odd thing is that he was just, you know, this was a Wednesday call. At one point this week, he goes to Utah to do an event for the governor there. And he's asked about Trump and he says, you know, it's just frightening what Trump doesn't know. So clearly Karl Rove still doesn't think very highly of Donald Trump. But now his group is saying to their donor, well, we think we possibly could help him win. If you think he's enormously unqualified, dangerous to put in office, maybe you shouldn't be trying to help him win. But the other thing is the strangest thing on that was the claim that there are polls indicating that Trump can beat Hillary. Well, those must be some really secret polls. And those polls must be seeing something completely different from what every public poll is showing and what really should be unnerving Republicans. Because you can always say, you know, the polls are skewed, or it's too early in the process, or, you know. But there's any way you want to measure it. Head to head, you're finding pretty much the same thing, a double digit lead for Hillary Clinton. Even if you say, it's too early. Well, both of them have like near 100% name ID. People know who these people are. And their favorable, unfavorable ratings are there. You know, there's a poll out this morning from ABC News, Greg, that says that, you know, there are more than half Americans have a strongly unfavorable view of Donald Trump. If you begin with 51% of the voters hating you, there's really not much you can do. The race is over before it began. The argument that Hillary is high negatives, yes, she does. For that matter, you know, Ted Cruz is, you know, fairly – they both have what would ordinarily be considered terrible high negatives. But Trump just completely skews the scale there. So it's very odd to see Karl Rove seeming to make his peace with the Trump nomination or developing a plan to help Donald Trump win or telling his supporters or his donors that, hey, there's still a possibility for this. It just seems odd in light of what we all know publicly and what Rove has said so far. Then finally, the last thought for this, Greg, is, man, if you're supporting Trump because you think he'll stand up to the GOP establishment like Karl Rove, make room on that bandwagon, right? It's going to be strange bedfellows. You got to wonder, does that taint Trump? Or does that all of a sudden, does Karl Rove seem like a good, sensible, true conservative who's, you know, now trustworthy to all the Trump supporters?
Oh, I can get along with people. I can work with people. I can make deals.
But he's a deal maker. There you go.
Do you get the sense here? Because you also have folks like Charles Krauthammer who detest Trump, but has basically said that the party is going to implode if Trump doesn't get the nomination because he's going to have the most delegates. He might not have a majority, but the most delegates going into Cleveland. So do you think a lot of folks on the right are simply concluding that it'll be easier to rebuild a party if Trump loses than if Trump doesn't get the nomination and there's just mass chaos?
You know, Trump has 37% of the vote in the Republican primary so far, and there are different polling of this, but generally the never Trump crowd, the folks who say he's completely unacceptable to them, are in the ballpark of 37% as well. So, Greg, which 37% do you want to lose? Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
That's an excellent question. I'm just trying to read into what these guys who have detested Trump for so long are trying to accomplish here, but it's a lose-lose proposition in a lot of ways.
If either side's got to leave the party, to me, it's a side that isn't me. You know, like happy trails, enjoy. You know, like I'd rather lose being true to my principles and conservatism, meaning conservatism, being what it has always stood for, than watching it transmogrify, to use a line from the old Calvin and Hobbes comic strip. Into this, you know, incoherent authoritarian populism. Better to go down fighting for what you believe in than to watch yourself turn into this zombie party. But that's where that's where I'm sitting right now, Greg. And at some point, I'm sure they'll just probably get me my own, you know, warm, fuzzy messages that those Republican delegates have been getting lately.
I'm surprised you don't already get them. But Jim, on that note, at least tomorrow's Friday. Talk to you then.
See you Friday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and join us again tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.